welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is August 12th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Underlay, Underlay, Get an IO, IO for Adults with Out-of-Hospital Cardiac Arrests. And our guest skeptic is Missy Carter. She is a PA practicing in emergency medicine in the Seattle area. She's also an adjunct faculty member with the Tacoma Community College Paramedic Program. And a new title, she is now the director for the Difficult Airway Course, EMS, in Washington State. Welcome back to the SGEM, Missy.
Thanks so much for having me back. I have to say I'm a little excited about your music choice today. Were we breaking out of the 80s and maybe trying to appeal to the millennial population?
I have to venture out and try new things and try to reach a broader audience. The SGEM is a large tent because emergency medicine, giving great care, requires a big team of people all working together. Now, I did think about using the song Old MacDonald Had a Farm, E-I-E-I-O, but I thought it may not be reaching the correct audience. I hope you're okay with this Nelly song.
Definitely, definitely. Still a throwback for me.
Well, for me, this is an unusual topic for you, because usually when you're on the SGEM, you're covering airway. Does this mean that you're going to have to become the director for the difficult IV access EMS course?
It's definitely a frame shift. I will say I've been very airway-centric this summer, and so this is actually nice gearing up for fall, because we'll be teaching IV and IO access to our new medic students in just a few weeks.
Well, EMS is often about the ABCs, and while the emergency medicine alphabet often goes ABCT, this time you're going to be talking about the C. We're talking about circulation, getting access in the field.
Well, there's definitely been some controversy on this topic, and so I'm super excited for this deep dive today.
Well, let's do a deep dive and give us a case to set up the podcast.
So an EMS crew arrives to your ED. They have a 58-year-old female who suffered a witness ventricular fibrillation, or VF, out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, or OCA. They have performed high-quality CPR, and they shocked the patient twice before giving amiodarone via the intraosseous, or IO, route. After the handoff, the medic tells you that she had a hard time finding intravenous access and decided to go straight to the IO. She wonders if she should have spent some more time on scene trying to get the IV access versus the tibial IO that she has in place now.
Well, we've covered OCA multiple times on the SGEM. This has included the classic paper from the legend of emergency medicine, Dr. Ian Steele, on BLS versus ALS. That was his OPALS trial, and that was SGEM number 64. We've also covered the use of mechanical CPR and pre-hospital hypothermia.
The issue of amiodarone versus lidocaine has also been covered on SGEM 162. This was the ALPS randomized control trial that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine 2016. The bottom line from that SGEM critical appraisal was that neither amiodarone or lidocaine is likely to provide a clinically important benefit in adult patients without a hospital cardiac arrest with shock refractory, VF, or pulseless VTAC.
And we did an episode on IO versus IV access for OCA on SGEM 231. This was a critical appraisal of an observational study published in Annals of EM. The key result from that episode was that significantly fewer patients had a favorable neurologic outcome in the IO group compared to the IV group. However, we must be careful not to overinterpret observational data. There could have been some unmeasured confounders that explains the differences between the two groups.
Now, in recent years, there's been a big effort to lower the cognitive load for our pre-hospital providers, especially in the setting of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And we'd really like to focus on interventions that positively affect patient outcomes. There has been a trend towards placing supraglottic devices over intubating patients during cardiac arrest, like we talked about in SGEM 247. Another trend is to use IOs to access over IV access to free up our pre-hospital providers to focus on the more meaningful interventions.
All right, Missy, what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
So does it matter if you give antiarrhythmic medications via the IV or IO route in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest?
And what's the reference?
The reference is DEA et al., Survival After Intravenous versus Interosseous Amiodarone, Lidocaine, or Placebo in Out-of-Hospital Shock Refractory Cardiac Arrest. This was in Circulation, January 2020.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population included in the trial?
They looked at adult patients with non-traumatic out-of-hospital cardiac arrest that was shock refractory ventricular fibrillation or pulseless ventricular tachycardia after one or more shocks during any time during their resuscitation.
And they excluded patients who had already received open-label IV lidocaine or amiodarone during resuscitation or had a known hypersensitivity to these drugs. What was the intervention?
They looked at amiodarone, lidocaine, or placebo given IO.
And the comparison?
Amiodarone, lidocaine, or placebo given IV.
Yeah, so they were trying to tease out if there was a difference between the route of administration, so whether it was IV or IO. How about the outcomes? What was their primary outcome?
The primary outcome was to see survival to hospital discharge.
Okay, fairly objective. What about their secondary outcomes?
The secondary outcomes look at survival to admission and then survival with a favorable neurologic outcome. As we often do, they use the modified Rankin score of 3 or less.
All right, a little bit more subjective. Well, the author's conclusions were, quote, "We found no significant effect modification by drug administration route for amiodarone or lidocaine in comparison with placebo during out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. However, point estimates for the effect of both drugs in comparison with placebo were significantly greater for the intravenous than for the interosseous route across virtually all outcomes and beneficial only for the intravenous route. Given that the study was underpowered to statistically assess interactions, these findings signal the potential importance of the drug administration route during resuscitation that merits further investigation." End of quote. All right, Missy, let's run through the checklist for observational studies. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
Okay. Did they address a clearly focused issue?
Yes, they did.
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Yes, it was a proper way to ask if there was an association between the route of administration and survival.
Yeah, and that's an important point because we'll get into that in the talk nerdy section because they can't claim causation because of the methodology here. How about the cohort? Was it recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias? And in this case, the exposure would be, did they get an IV or did they get an IO?
Yes, they knew if the patient got an IV or an IO.
And how about the outcome? And this is the primary outcome. Was it accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yeah, mortality is definitely an objective primary outcome.
All right, have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
Unsure about this one. The authors acknowledged in their discussion that measured co-founders may be responsible for the observed difference between the groups.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yeah, quite complete. It was over 99%.
And how precise are the results? And when we're talking about precision, we're looking at how tight the confidence intervals were around the point estimate of the observed effect size.
So there was wide confidence intervals around the point estimates for the risk ratios.
Hey, Missy, do you believe the results?
Yeah.
Now, do you think that results can be applied to the local population? Now, you're out west in the U.S. I'm up in the north in Canada. Do you think it can be applied broadly?
I think it can be applied to American, EMS, and Canadian, of course, but maybe not to countries with different pre-hospital settings.
All right, the final question, the 11th question. Do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Yeah, there was a 2018 observational trial that showed significantly fewer favorable neurologic outcomes in IO versus IV in the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest.
And the key part of that answer was an observational trial. All right, let's go through the results from this trial. In the ALPS publication, there were almost 40,000 patients with non-traumatic out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, of which 7,000, or close to 19%, had that shock refractory ventricular fibrillation or pulseless VTAC. Now, the intention to treat population was just over 4,600, and the per protocol population was just over 3,000 patients.
So there was no statistical difference between amiodarone at 24.4%, lidocaine at 23.7%, and placebo, which was at 21%, in the ALPS study. There was also no statistical difference in the favorable neurologic function at discharge between those two groups.
All right, so some people may describe that ALPS trial as a negative study. I like to be positive. I like to think the glass is half full. And I think there's value to not finding a statistical difference. It's really good to see these types of results published because they asked an important question, but for both their primary and secondary outcomes, couldn't find a statistical difference in this population of thousands of patients. Now, this study that we're looking at is the pre-specified subgroup analysis of the 3,000 per protocol population in the ALPS publication. The IV route was used 3/4 of the time, and the intraosseous route was used 1/4 of the time. The mean age of participants was 63 years of age, 80% were male, and less than 1/3 occurred in a public location. 60% had bystander initiated CPR, and the time to first arrival of EMS was about 6 minutes. So that paints the demographics of who these 3,000 people in this per protocol analysis.
Now, there were some differences, mostly in sex and time to EMS arrival and some cardiopulmonary resuscitation characteristics between the cohort in the IO versus the IV, but other aspects were similar.
So what was the key result of this subgroup analysis of the ALPS study?
So there was no significant effect modification by drug administration route, IV or IO, for amiodarone or lidocaine in comparison with placebo during the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest.
But let's dive into the details a bit in that primary outcome, which was survival to hospital discharge. They did find some differences.
They did. Only amiodarone versus placebo IV was statistically significant. The p-value was 0.014.
Yeah, and this translated into an adjusted risk ratio that was 1.6 for IV amiodarone versus placebo.
There's no statistical difference, however, for amiodarone or lidocaine compared to placebo when it was given in the IO route.
And this might get a bit confusing because you're listening to this. And so in the blog post, we will put a table in that shows the different outcomes for survival to hospital discharge depending on whether it was IV or IO, and whether the patient got amiodarone, lidocaine, or placebo. But remember, this is a subgroup analysis, and then we're looking at subgroups within that subgroup of the larger ALPS trial. How about the secondary outcomes? Survival to hospital admission.
So it was greater if the drugs were given IV compared to placebo, but not when given IO.
And then that other secondary outcome, the survival with favorable neurologic outcome, which was defined as having a modified Rankin scale score of 3 or less.
This was greater too if the drugs were given IV compared to placebo, but again, IO, there was no difference.
All right, it's time to get nerdy with me. You ready to talk?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask.
Yeah, 5 points. Here we go. You get number one.
So this was an observational study. This is a subgroup analysis of the ALPS trial, which makes it an observational study, not a randomized control trial like the original. The authors properly pre-specified their subgroup and reported the data as unadjusted and adjusted, which decreases the chance of finding spurious outcomes. However, pre-specifying subgroups and adjusting the data cannot overcome the lack of randomization. We can only conclude associations from this study and not attribute causation to any of the findings.
In other words, we need to be cautious with regards to interpreting this subgroup analysis. And that leads into point number two about subgroup analyses. We should generally view these things as hypothesis generating. Very few claims from randomized control trial subgroups get tested in future trials. And in fact, there is a study by Wallach et al., and they found that in 117 subgroup claims from RCTs, only 10% were actually tested in a future study to confirm the claim. And of those 10% of subgroups that actually were tested, they found a nice round number confirming the original claim. And that nice round number was 0%. This gets back to an article by Youssef et al. In JAMA in 1991. So that's 30 years ago. And Youssef said, quote, "The overall trial result is usually a better guide to the direction of effect in subgroups than the apparent effect observed within a subgroup." And I think that's a really important point to take away from this subgroup study.
The next point is about the pharmacologic characteristics. So the authors pose that some differences between lidocaine and the more lipophilic amiodarone might decrease the efficacy of IO versus IV administration. While this is really interesting, we need to remember that it's easy to fool ourselves with these types of explanations. The body is very complicated, and there's much that we don't understand. Such a claim should be demonstrated with evidence.
Yeah, so it's great to have a hypothesis and talk about the differences in the pharmacokinetics or pharmacodynamics of these different drugs. But at the end of the day, the hypothesis would need to be confirmed and demonstrated with convincing evidence. All right, the fourth nerdy point I wanted to talk about was per protocol analysis. The more conservative method of analyzing a superiority trial would have been to do an intention to treat analysis. Doing a per protocol analysis can increase the point estimate of effect size. Even with this bias, the per protocol analysis did not demonstrate a statistical difference in the primary outcome for the original ALPS trial. The ITT analysis for the ALPS trial can be found in their supplemental material, and it reported no significant differences between the trial groups in their primary or secondary outcomes. Unfortunately, they didn't provide the data broken down into IV versus IO.
So the next nerdy point is the site of the IO placement. So as we discussed earlier in this study, about 3/4 of the participants received an IV and about 1/4 of them had an IO placed. The IO was predominantly tibial, however, which may have biased the result. The authors hypothesize that a more proximal route, such as humeral or sternal, may have made a difference. We think this is unlikely, given that there's no high-quality evidence that any ACLS drugs for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest has been shown to have a patient-oriented benefit.
All right, that's it for Talking Nerdy. Now it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion.
So we agree, there's no statistical difference between IV or IO administration of antiarrhythmic medications compared to placebo. A subgroup showed that there may or may not be a benefit given giving amiodarone IV, but we would need more evidence to confirm.
All right, well, Missy, how about you give us a bottom line?
We suggest that focusing on treatments that have been determined to provide patient-oriented benefit is the most important. Things like high-quality CPR and defibrillation in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, rather than focusing on treatments that don't have high-quality evidence to support their use. So the type of airway that we place, our vascular access, vasopressors, or antiarrhythmics shouldn't be our main focus in a resuscitation.
So how are you going to resolve this case you presented of a woman having an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest?
So you tell the paramedic that she was right to focus on high-quality CPR and defibrillation, and you give an extra kudo for placing that supraglottic device on scene. When it comes to IV versus IO, it's reasonable to place an IO if IV access is not practical. At this time, the evidence to support IV over IO is pretty weak, and EMS providers should focus on interventions that matter most.
And how are you going to take this subgroup analysis of the ALPS trial and apply it clinically?
So we should continue to decrease our cognitive load whenever possible. Given the complexity of these out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, it's reasonable to give ACLS medications through an IV or an IO route, knowing that it's unlikely that the drug or the route that it's administered will make any clinical difference. It's fine to use an IO route first, especially if the IV is not easily obtained.
All right, so Missy, what are you going to tell the patient?
So I would tell the patient's family members that she had a cardiac arrest. CPR was done and shocks were given to her heart. She also received some IV medications. Her heart is beating now, and she's in good hands with our hospital critical care team.
It's time to announce the Keener Contest winner, and last week's winner was Dr. Rob Parsons from Australia. He knew tuberculosis was previously treated by performing an iatrogenic intentional pneumothorax to, quote, rest the lung. Missy, what question do you have for us this episode?
IO fluid administration's been around since the 1830s, but it wasn't until 1940 that the first successful blood transfusion was given IO. What was the IO site chosen for this transfusion?
If you know what site was used for the first successful blood transfusion, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. And as a reminder to everyone out there, you can receive CME credits for something you're already doing, and it'll also help support the SGEM. The content will always be free and open access. But if you want to get credit for listening to the podcast, then just click on the link, get some CME credits, and help sustain this free open access to medical education project. Well, thanks, Missy, for coming on and getting outside your, you know, expertise in airway and talking about IVIO access.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken. I'm excited to do a little frame shift away from airway on occasion.
All right. Well, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next episode.